sur location.
Jak holu zatí on?
Location. Location.
Welcome to Echolocation, the show that listens to the unhuman world. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lojudis, and I'm devoting this episode to Roger and Katie Payne, the pioneering bioacousticians who were the first to share whale songs with their groundbreaking 1970 album, Songs of the Humpback Whale. In the 1960s and 70s, they were a married couple, both of whom were musicians and biologists, and they collaborated on acoustic studies of whales and also spearheaded conservation efforts. After they divorced in the 1980s, they each went on to distinguished careers in bioacoustics research. Roger Payne passed away earlier this month, and I'm going to share some of his obituary, which appeared in the New York Times on June 14th, written by reporter Sam Roberts. And quoting from the obituary, Roger S. Payne, a biologist whose discovery that whales serenade one another, prompted him to record their cacophonous repertoire of baying, booming, shrieking, squealing, mooing, and caterwauling, resulting in both a hit album and a rallying cry to ban commercial whaling, died on Saturday in his home in South Woodstock, Vermont. He was 88. Dr. Payne combined his captivating scientific research with the emotive power of music to spur one of the world's most successful mammal conservation campaigns. He amplified whales' voices to help win a congressional crackdown on commercial whaling in the 1970s and a global moratorium in the 80s. And he established Ocean Alliance, a research and advocacy organization, as well as programs at the Wildlife Conservation Society and elsewhere that will continue his groundbreaking work. He was instrumental in protecting and saving those large animals throughout the world, Dr. Howard Rosenbaum, director of the Wildlife Conservation Society's Ocean Giants program, said in an interview. Professor Diana Rice, director of the Animal Behavior and Conservation Program at Hunter College of the City University of New York, said in an email that Dr. Payne's album, Songs of the Humpback Whale, had a profound effect in raising global awareness and empathy for whales and became a national anthem for the environmental movement. In 1971, Dr. Payne founded Ocean Alliance, now based in Gloucester, Massachusetts, to study and protect whales and their environment. He was an assistant professor of biology at Rockefeller University and a research zoologist at what is now known as the Wildlife Conservation Society's Center for Field Biology and Conservation, both in New York. He was also scientific director of the Society's Whale Fund until 1983. He was named a MacArthur Foundation Fellow in 1984. Dr. Payne was the author of several books, including Among Whales in 1995, and produced or hosted 6 documentaries, including the IMAX movie Whales, An Unforgettable Journey in 1996. More recently, he signed on as the principal advisor to Project SETI, founded in 2020 with the goal of translating the communication of sperm whales. In the early 1960s, Dr. Payne was a moth expert who had never seen a whale. His curiosity was piqued when a porpoise washed up on a Massachusetts beach and he heard whale songs recorded by William Chaville of the Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution in Cape Cod, Mass. A friend suggested that he would have a better chance of seeing and hearing live whales in Bermuda. It was there that he met a Navy engineer who, while monitoring Soviet submarine traffic off the East Coast with underwater microphones, had detected another source of undersea sounds that formed thematic patterns and appeared to last as long as 30 minutes. The sounds emanated from whales, whose sequence of sounds Dr. Payne defined as songs sung both solo and in ensemble. The songs could sometimes be audible for thousands of miles across the ocean. "What I heard blew my mind," he told The New Yorker last year. Dr. Payne and a fellow researcher, Scott McVeigh, confirmed in 1967 that humpback whales sing in what Dr. Payne described as a chorus of exuberant, uninterrupted rivers of sound. He analyzed the audio with a sound spectrograph and with collaborators, including his wife and fellow researcher, Catherine Boynton Payne, known as Katie, as well as Mr. McVeigh and an engineer, Frank Watlington. They notated the rhythmic melody in what resembled an electronic music score. Dr. Payne then wrote in Science magazine in 1971 that humpback whales produce a series of beautiful and varied sounds for a period of 7 to 30 minutes and then repeat the same series with considerable precision. How, why, and even if the whales were actually communicating remained a mystery. Whales have no larynxes or vocal cords, so they appear to make their sounds by pushing air from their lungs through their nasal cavities. Male humpbacks seem to make the sounds especially during breeding season. Notwithstanding whatever advocacy and research Dr. Payne and his colleagues did, it was the whale songs that caught the public imagination and fired the global movement. The music critic Donal Henahan wrote in the New York Times in 1970 that the whales produce strange and moving lyricism, which the Times described in a separate article as akin to a haunting oboe coronet duet trailing off to an eerie wailing bagpipe. Songs of the humpback whale landed on the Billboard 200 album chart and stayed there for several weeks in 1970, initially selling more than 100,000 copies. The track list included Solo Whale and Slowed Down Solo Whale, Tower Whales, Distant Whales, and The Three Whale Trip. If, after hearing this, preferably in a dark room, you don't feel you have been put in touch with your mammalian past, Mr. Henahan wrote, you had best give up listening to vocal music. Some of the whales' melodies were incorporated by Judy Collins on one track of her album Whales and Nightingales. Pete Seeger was inspired by the melodies to write Song of the World's Last Whale, and the New York Philharmonic performed And God Created Great Whales. And the New York Philharmonic performed And God Created Great Whales, composed by Alan Hoynahes, and incorporating recorded whale songs, sounds that Mr. Henahan wrote carried overtones of ecological doom and a wordless communication from our primordial past. In 1977, when NASA launched Voyagers 1 and 2 to probe the far reaches of the solar system, the songs of the humpback whales were carried into space on records that could be played by any alien with a stylus. Roger Searle Payne was born on January 29, 1935 in Manhattan to Elizabeth Searle Payne, a music teacher, and Edward Benedict Payne, an electrical engineer. He graduated from Harvard with a bachelor's degree in biology in 1956 and earned a doctorate in animal behavior from Cornell University in 1961. Roger's career, his life, was marked by his deep commitment to the lives of whales and other marine life, and then to the interdependence of all species. Professor Stuart Firestein, a former chairman of the biology department at Columbia University, said by email, "Roger's way was not coercion, but creating in others the awe and wonder that he felt for the beauty of life on this planet." That was some long excerpts from the New York Times obituary for Roger Payne, written by Sam Roberts and published on June 14th, 2023. And we're going to listen now to some of the 1970 album Songs of the Humpback Whale. Thank you.
Adieu, Mormont Hill, and the dear land of Crimant, I bid you farewell. I'm bound off for Greenland and ready to sail, in hopes to find riches, in hunting. The cold coast of Greenland, my love, will not chill, and the longer my absence, more loving she'll feel. Our ship is well rigged, and she's ready to sail. The crew, they are to follow the whale, where the icebergs do float and the stormy winds blow, where the land and the ocean is covered with snow. The cold coast of Greenland is barren and bare. No seed time nor harvest is ever known there. And the birds here sing sweetly in mountain and dell. But there's no bird in Greenland to sing to. There is no habitation for a man to live there, and the king of that country is the fierce Greenland bear, and there'll be no temptation to tarry long there. With our ship bumper full, we will homeward repair. Dear land of Crimont.
You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM in New York's Upper Hudson Valley and worldwide at wavefarm.org. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas, and we've been listening to side one of the album Songs of the Humpback Whale, recorded by Roger and Katie Payne. And this album was the impetus for whale conservation in the early 1970s, global whale conservation. And it was also the inspiration for many musicians to incorporate whale songs into their recordings. So we also heard a track off of Judy Collins's 1970 album called Whales and Nightingales. And the track we heard that featured Humpback Whale's recordings is Farewell to Tarwathi. So Roger Payne just passed away on June 10th, 2023. And we've been featuring his obituary as well as the recordings on today's show. But now we're going to turn to learn more about Roger Payne's research partner and also his wife from the 60s, during the 60s and 70s. Her name is Katie Payne, and she's a bioacoustician in her own right and is the person that actually studied the musicality and communication potential of the humpback whale songs. So to share more about Katie Payne, I am going to read an excerpt from a New York Times article that appeared on November 9th, 1993, and it's entitled Scientist at Work, Katie Payne Picking Up Mammals' Deep Notes, and it was written by Jane E. Brody. Born Catherine Boynton on a farm in Ithaca in 1937 to a father who was an apple grower and Cornell professor and a mother who loved books and music, Katie Payne was a sickly child who missed a lot of school and instead spent much of her youth exploring the gorges of Ithaca and learning to appreciate the creatures painted by her grandfather, the famous wildlife illustrator Luis Agaz Fuertes. As a student at Cornell, although intensely interested in nature, she majored in music, she said, because I was turned off by what was then the molecular orientation of biology. Then she met Roger Payne, a graduate student in biology who was playing the cello at a concert, a performance of the St. Matthew Passion, in which she was singing. For Ms. Payne, it was the first of a series of serendipitous experiences that have helped make her preeminent in the field of animal communication, despite a lack of formal training and advanced degrees. Marriage and the arrival of four children in 4 years ended her attempt to earn a graduate degree in biology. But when her husband's whale song research got underway, she spent hours each day analyzing the tapes. She and Roger Payne began working together in the field, taking the children out of school for extended research trips to Bermuda, Hawaii, and eventually Patagonia, where the Paynes launched studies of the southern white right whale. It didn't seem to hurt them academically, Miss Payne said of her children's extended absences from school. Indeed, she adds proudly, all four of my children are in careers that involve wildlife conservation. The Paynes had discovered the songs of the humpback whales during a brief trip in 1968 to Bermuda, where Frank Watlington, a Navy engineer who had been monitoring an array of hydrophones many miles into the sea, decided to trust them with his best-kept secret. While the three watched a pair of humpbacks disappear into the warm sea, he confided, "You know they make sounds, don't you?" He then took them to the bowels of his ship and played some of his tapes. Mr. Watlington had feared that whalers would use the whale sounds to help locate their prey, and so had told only a few trusted friends about the hypnotic songs his hydrophones had picked up. As it turned out, through the work of the Paynes and their collaborators, the whale songs, which were captured on best-selling nature recording, aroused intense public interest and concern about whales, which helped curtail the whaling industry long enough to allow the beginning of a recovery. Of Ms. Payne's contribution to the work, Dr. Peter Marker, professor of neurobiology and behavior at the University of California at Davis, said, quote, "She really was the one who worked out the most extraordinary findings about whale songs. The fact that they rhyme and the predictable ways in which the whales change their songs each season," end quote. He said she had the patience and tenacity to pore over 31 years of recordings, making cutouts of the musical lines spewed out by a spectrograph, painstakingly analyzing and overlapping them, and listening over and over again until she could discern the individual voices in a whale quartet and then write out the score. Her findings demonstrated that although at any one time all the whales in the same large area of the ocean sing the same song and all change their song in the same way, they do not all sing the same number of phrases. "It's like a round in which some of the singers leave out some of the lines," she explained. Yet amid the seeming cacophony, there is remarkable order, with each whale singing the same themes in the same sequence, each changing the phrases in the same way as the singing season progresses, and each resuming the next season with roughly the same song he had sung when the previous season ended. With Linda Gouni, then an independent researcher, Ms. Payne also found that the more involved the songs were, the more likely they were to have repeating refrains that constituted rhymes. This finding suggested that the whales were using rhyme the way people do, as a mnemonic device to help them remember complex materials. End quote. So, Katie Payne studied the sounds of humpback whales and their songs up until around 1984, when her marriage to Roger Payne was ending. And at that time, she developed an interest in the low frequency sounds that elephants were making. And she really was a pioneer and at the forefront of even understanding the fact that elephants use low frequency sound to communicate. So she began collaborating with scientists from Cornell University, studying the bioacoustics of elephant communication and low frequency sound. And she founded the Elephant Listening Project, which was a program and still is a program at the Bioacoustics Research Program at the Lab of Ornithology. And she retired in 2006 and took up violin building as her retirement hobby. But she made her mark in the field of bioacoustics, and she's often recognized for her innovative thinking and brilliance, as she wasn't actually trained in bioacoustics, but she merged her skills in music and her knowledge of biology to discern the communication patterns of humpback whales and of elephants. You're listening to Echolocation on WGXC 90.7 FM Creative Community Radio. I'm your hostess, Elizabeth Lo Judas, and we've been listening to more of side one of the 1970 release Songs of the Humpback Whale. We also heard the 1978 release by artist Kate Bush called Moving, which uses recordings from the Songs of the Humpback Whale album. Just before Roger Payne passed away, he published an article in Time magazine, and the article is entitled, "I Spent My Life Saving the Whales, Now They Might Save Us." So I'm just going to read this letter that he was sending to the world right before his death. More than 50 years ago, my team and I first discovered that whales sing to each other. Recordings we captured of the beautiful, evocative songs of the humpback whale captivated people all over the world. Whale song became the soundtrack for the Save the Whales movement, one of the most successful conservation initiatives in history. It led to the 1972 Marine Mammal Protection Act, which marked the end of large-scale whaling in the United States and saved several whale populations from extinction. In the decades since, I've often pondered what it would take to spark a new conservation movement uniquely suited to the opportunities and challenges we face in this age of dire warnings and unassailable evidence of a rapidly changing planet. A movement that inspires a new generation, gives voice to the marginalized, and uses science to inspire awe instead of fear. The question has recently led me to an initiative I've involved with called Project SETI. In a quest to better understand our world and its inhabitants, SETI scientists are using advanced machine learning and state-of-the-art robotics to listen to and translate the communication of sperm whales. SETI's work in Dominica is in its early stages, and though much has already been done to lay the groundwork for this massive effort at interspecies communication, including a scientific roadmap published last year. I find myself at 88 years of age, very close to the end of a long life, coming to terms with the fact that I will not be around to find out what we learn. But what I can tell you is why this monumental journey of discovery matters. The way I see it, the most consequential scientific discovery of the past 100 years isn't E equals MC squared or plate tectonics or translating the human genome. These are all quite monumental, to be sure, but there's one discovery so consequential that unless we respond to it, it may kill us all, graveyard dead. It is this: every species, including humans, depends on a suite of other species to keep the world habitable for it. And each of those species depends in turn on an overlapping but somewhat different suite of species to keep their niche livable for them. But there's a problem here. No one can even name all the essential supporting species, let alone describe their full roles. We do know that some of the most essential species are microscopic plants and animals that we kill unintentionally by the trillions. But we know so little about them, they don't even have common names, just Latin names, and many are unknown, unnamed, and undescribed species. Faced with such capricious ignorance, our only rational course of action is to use every means possible, regardless of cost, to try to save all species of life, knowing that if we fail to save enough of the essential ones, we will have no future. The things we consider to be life's worst disasters, wars, plagues, and pandemics that have killed off tens of millions of people but left a global population of survivors greater than the number of the dead, will seem like minor nuisances compared to what we will experience if we kill off essential species that keep this planet livable for you and me. The consequences of this failure are so astronomical that it is clear that there is nothing else nearly as important and urgent as preserving the rest of life. The challenge now is figuring out how to motivate ourselves and our fellow humans to make species preservation our highest calling, something we will never cut corners on, delay, postpone, diminish, or defund. How can we get this idea across to the whole world? Inspiration is the key. Antoine de Saint-Exupéry, the author of The Little Prince, understood this and how to use it positively when he wrote, "If you want to build a ship, don't drum up the men to gather wood, divide up the work, and give orders. Instead, teach them to yearn for the vast and endless sea." I believe that the awe-inspiring life forms like whales can focus human minds on the urgency of ceasing our destruction of the wild world. Many of humanity's most intractable problems are caused by disregarding the voices of the other, including non-humans. Just imagine what would be possible if we understood what animals are saying to each other, what occupies their thoughts, what they love, fear, desire, avoid, hate, are intrigued by, and treasure. If we could communicate with animals, ask them questions, and receive answers, no matter how simple those questions and answers might turn out to be, the world might soon be moved enough to at least start the process of halting our runaway destruction of life. We might find it easier to work with parrots or dogs, but whales, by their sheer size, their commanding voices, and their surprising grace, elicit a kind of attention that smaller life forms simply can't. Just as redwoods trigger stronger emotions than dogwoods, the magnificence of whales has a unique ability to infuse us with awe. I've received criticism for spending time and treasure trying to translate what I refer to as whale speak. My accusers complain that the needs of humans should always come before the needs of non-humans. But the reason humanity finds itself in its present predicament is in major part because we have always put the needs of humans before the needs of the rest of life. As my time runs out, I am possessed with the hope that humans worldwide are smart enough and adaptable enough to put the savings of other species where it belongs, at the top of the list of our most important jobs. I believe that science can help us survive our folly. 50 years ago, people fell in love with the songs of the humpback whales and joined together to ignite a global conservation movement. It's time for us to once again listen to the whales, and this time to do it with every bit of empathy and ingenuity we can muster so that we might possibly understand them.
I heard the song of the world's last whale as I rocked in the moonlight and reefed the sail. It'll happen to you also without fail if it happens to me, sang the world's last whale. It was down off Bermuda early last spring, near an underwater mountain where the humpbacks sing. I lowered the microphone about a quarter mile down, switched on the recorder, let the tape spin round. I didn't just hear grunting, I didn't just hear squeaks, I didn't just hear bellows, I didn't just hear shrieks. It was the musical singing and the passionate wail that came from the heart of the world's last whale. Down in the Antarctic, there the harpoons wait, but it's up on land you decide my fate. In London town, there'll be telling the tale if it's life or death for the world's last whale. So here's a little test to see how you feel. Here's a little test for this age of the automobile. If we can save our singers up in the sea. Perhaps there's a chance to save you and me. I heard the song of the world's last whale as I rocked in the moonlight and reefed the sail. It'll happen to you also without fail. If it happens to me, sang the world's last whale.
We've been listening to Pete Seeger. The song is called Song of the World's Last Whale. Thanks for listening to this episode of Echolocation. You can find out more about the show and find links to information about Roger and Katie Payne, as well as about humpback whales, elephants, and some of the tracks that were shared on today's show at facebook.com/echolocationwgxc. Or you can visit my website to the echolocation page, which is lizlog.net/echolocation.